Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr in einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
Mit Mastercard Business Bonus sichern Sie sich attraktive Rabatte auf Tools und Services für Ihr Unternehmen. Alle Angebote unter mastercard.com/businessbonus.
Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. You're being lied to. The so-called Gaza famine is a hoax, a manufactured crisis orchestrated by Hamas, laundered by the United Nations, and parroted by the same media hacks who told you lockdowns would save lives. Aid is pouring into Gaza, but Hamas is stealing it, selling it, and using starvation as a political weapon, and your tax dollars are paying for it. I'll expose the entire racket. Plus, John Carpe, president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, will be here. We'll dive into some of the most pivotal court cases in Canada currently, battles that could decide whether your charter rights remain sacred or become meaningless platitudes. Are Canada's courts still defenders of freedom, or have they become tools of government overreach? We may also have some breaking news on the Sean Foyt situation. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Wednesday, August the 6th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
The world is watching a masterclass in manipulation unfold in Gaza. The headlines scream of famine, of children wasting away, of a humanitarian apocalypse, all pinned on Israel. It's a story so emotionally charged it's almost impossible to question it without being branded a monster. But that's exactly what Hamas is banking on. The Gaza famine is no natural disaster. It's a deliberate, cold-blooded scam designed to demonize Israel while Hamas rakes in profits and power. Forget the tear-jerking photos and sanctimonious editorials. The real culprits aren't in Tel Aviv. They're skulking in Gaza's tunnels, sipping coffee in Qatar's luxury hotels, and laughing all the way to the bank. Hamas has turned Gaza into a stage for their propaganda, with civilians as unwilling actors and the international community as their gullible audience. It's time to rip apart the famine hoax, lay bare Hamas's role as the true architect of Gaza's misery, and call out the global enablers who keep this charade alive. Gaza's story is a saga of conflict, betrayal, and broken dreams. This 25-mile strip of Mediterranean coast has been a battleground for centuries, from ancient trade routes to modern warfare. After the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, Egypt controlled Gaza, only for Israel to seize it in 1967. In 2005, Israel pulled out its settlers, a gesture that was meant to foster peace. But peace never came. Hamas, a terrorist group by any honest definition, staged a bloody coup in 2007, turning Gaza into their fiefdom. Hamas's reign brought rocket attacks, suicide bombings, and a sprawling network of tunnels used for smuggling and terror. Israel and Egypt responded with a blockade to choke off Hamas's weapon supply. But it also squeezed Gaza's economy. Unemployment hit 50%. Power outages stretched 20 hours a day, and clean water became a distant memory. The blockade is real, but it's not the whole story. Hamas has exploited these conditions, turning hardship into a weapon and suffering into a currency. But let's get one thing straight. There is no famine in Gaza. The very word is a lie, a loaded term weaponized to inflame passions and obscure truth. Before Hamas's barbaric attack of October 7, 2023, when they slaughtered 1,200 Israelis and kidnapped hundreds, Gaza was poor, but not starving. UN data, hardly a pro-Israel source, showed Gaza's infant mortality and life expectancy on par with Jordan's. Markets functioned, schools operated, and aid flowed through crossings like Kerem Shalom. Israel facilitated thousands of aid trucks yearly, and groups like the World Food Program ensured distribution. Then came October 7, a day of unthinkable brutality that flipped the script. Israel tightened security, but also ramped up aid efforts. Corridors opened, airdrops launched, tactical pauses were offered, yet the aid vanished. Why? Because Hamas has turned Gaza into a black hole for humanitarian resources. UN reports buried beneath their anti-Israel rhetoric admit that up to 85% of aid since the war began is stolen. Trucks loaded with food, medicine, and fuel are hijacked by Hamas gunmen, diverted into tunnels, and sold on black markets at obscene markups. Flour at 300% above cost, bananas at $80 a kilo. For most Gazans, these are not staples. They're luxuries dangled just out of reach. Hamas's playbook is diabolical. They hoard aid, create artificial scarcity, and drive up prices, profiting off desperation. Civilians face armed militias at distribution centers where a bag of rice might cost a bullet or a beating. Then Hamas trots out starving children for the cameras, blaming Israel for the misery they've engineered. It's a lie so brazen it's almost genius, exploiting Western guilt to paint Israel as the monster while Hamas's warlords live like kings. The real victims are Gaza's people, trapped in a nightmare of Hamas's making. Picture Aisha, a mother, queuing for hours at an aid point, only to find it looted by Hamas thugs. Her daughter, Lina, is malnourished, her growth stunted at age 5. Aisha sees the aid trucks, but knows they're a mirage. Hamas ensures the food goes to fighters or black market barons. Or take Yusuf, a Gaza City baker whose flour supplies are taxed by Hamas enforcers until he can't afford to bake. His customers, once loyal, now scrounge for scraps. The hostages from October 7 are another layer of this tragedy. Evyatar David, forced to dig tunnels under threat of death, or Ram Breslavsky, begging for food to share with Gaza civilians. They're props in Hamas's propaganda machine. Their pain is exploited to sell the famine lie, while Hamas's leadership sip champagne in Doha. A 2024 Medicine Without Frontiers report paints a grim picture. 75% of Gaza children suffer trauma, from night terrors to suicidal thoughts. Adults are crumbling, with depression and anxiety rampant. This isn't a famine. It's a psychological and physical siege orchestrated by Hamas to break a population while blaming Israel. Yet, there's defiance. Grassroots organizers smuggle food to neighbors, risking Hamas's wrath. Activists like Noor, a young blogger, expose the group's corruption online, dodging death threats to tell the truth. These are the real heroes, drowned out by the famine hoax's noise. The United Nations is no bystander. It's an accomplice. UNRWA, the agency tasked with aiding Gaza, knows Hamas uses aid convoys to smuggle weapons. They know food and medicine are diverted to fighters or sold for profit, yet they point finger at Israel's security checks at Kerem Shalom, a crossing fortified because Hamas hides bombs in baby formula. The UN's whining about bureaucratic delays is a distraction from their failure to confront Hamas's theft. They're not incompetent, they're complicit, choosing politics over principle. When a UN official gripes that Kerem Shalom isn't a walk-up warehouse, they're dodging the truth. Hamas's actions necessitate those checks. Rice bags have hidden grenades, medical kits have concealed ammo. Israel's inspections, slow as they are, exist because Hamas made trust impossible. The UN could demand accountability from Hamas, but instead opts for press releases slamming Israel. It's cowardice dressed as humanitarianism. Western governments are pouring fuel on the fire. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has pledged that in September of this year, he'll recognize a Palestinian state at the UN. He's handing Hamas a propaganda win. He claims it excludes Hamas, that it's tied to future elections. But let's not kid ourselves. Hamas is popping champagne. They see this as a validation of their terror, proof that butchering civilians and starving their own people pays dividends. Carney's gesture isn't diplomacy, it's surrender, a middle finger to Israel and a nod to terrorists. Canada's aid is worse. Military airdrops meant to feed Gaza's hungry are intercepted by Hamas before they hit the ground. Food and medicine are stockpiled for fighters or sold at prices no civilian can afford. Your tax dollars, Canadian taxpayers, are bankrolling Hamas's war machine while Carney preens for the camera. This isn't charity. It's a subsidy for slaughter wrapped in the smug veneer of virtue. The mainstream media is the hoax's megaphone. Outlets like CNN and BBC regurgitate Hamas's talking points, flashing images of starving kids without a whisper about the stolen aid. A single photo of an empty market outweighs a mountain of evidence, UN reports, Israel intelligence, even Gazan whistleblowers, proving Hamas's racket. Social media is worse, with influencers and activists peddling the famine lie to millions, no questions asked. They're not journalists, they're propagandists, too lazy or too biased to dig for the truth. Hamas knows perception is power. They don't need to win battles, they need to win Twitter. A viral video of a crying child captioned, "Israel's famine does more damage than a rocket." The media's complicity isn't just sloppy reporting, it's a betrayal of journalism's core duty to question narratives, not parrot them. This isn't just about Gaza, it's a war on reality. Hamas's famine hoax is a test of whether we value truth over feelings. By buying their lie, we're not just abandoning Israel, we're torching the principles that hold civilization together. Justice, accountability, and honesty are on the line. When we let terrorists manipulate us with staged suffering, we embolden every thug from Gaza to Tehran. The consequences are global. Legitimizing Hamas's tactics through aid, recognition, or silence tells every terror group that starvation and propaganda are winning strategies. We're not just failing Gaza's civilians, we're setting the stage for more chaos, more hostages, more massacres. History screams warnings. Appeasement in the 1930s led to catastrophe. Today's UN resolutions and diplomatic gestures are the modern equivalent. Paper promises while Hamas sharpens its knives. This hoax demands a reckoning. First, Hamas must be exposed and defanged. Aid must be tied to ironclad oversight. Independent monitors, not UN cronies, to ensure it reaches civilians. Hamas's tunnels, their lifeline for theft and terror, need to be destroyed once and for all. Their black market empire must be dismantled, with sanctions on their Doha-based financiers. Second, Israel's security measures aren't the problem, they're the response. Kerem Shalom's checks exist because Hamas made them necessary. The UN and NGOs must stop whining and start cooperating to streamline aid without compromising safety. Anything less is aiding and abetting terror. Third, Western leaders like Mark Carney need to grow a spine. Stop rewarding Hamas with diplomatic wins. Redirect aid to empower Gaza's civilians, not their oppressors. Fund grassroots groups, not corrupt middlemen. And for God's sake, stop pretending statehood will magically fix a region ruled by fanatics. Finally, the media needs to do its job. Investigate Hamas's theft. Amplify Gazan voices who risk everything to expose the truth. Stop peddling sob stories that serve terrorists. Journalism should be a sword, not a megaphone for lies. The Gaza famine hoax is a moral and intellectual disgrace. Hamas has turned suffering into a business, starvation into a strategy, and civilians into collateral damage. The UN, Western leaders, and the media are their enablers, too weak or too biased to call out the truth. Gaza's people deserve better. A future where food isn't a weapon, where aid isn't stolen, where hope isn't crushed by terror. We're at a crossroads. Do we keep swallowing the lie, funneling money to murderers while blaming Israel? Or do we demand accountability, expose Hamas's racket, and fight for a world where truth matters? This isn't just Gaza's battle, it's ours. If we let this hoax stand, we're not just betraying Israel, we're surrendering to a future where terrorists write the script. Choose truth. Call out the liars. Stand against the famine hoax. Because if we don't, the next grave Hamas digs might be ours. Coming up next, John Carpe, president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show right after these.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
As promised, John Carpe is here, the president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. John, welcome back. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing well, Richard. Glad to be back with you.
So many important cases before the courts right now, and you're right in the middle of these. The Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario has dismissed this complaint from transgender activist Jessica Simpson, formerly Jonathan Yanev, who seems to be in the news every few months. Jonathan had filed this suit against Canada Galaxy Pageants several years ago, but on July 28th, the court dismissed the case. So just tell me what happened here. What was Simpson's claim in this case?
So Galaxy Pageants is an organization that hosts and runs beauty pageants for girls and women. They have a policy that you need to be a woman to participate. You can be a transgender male who has fully transitioned. So if you've had all of the surgeries and you no longer have your male parts, you could go into their change room, which does have girls as young as 6 years old. And when Jessica Simpson, formerly Jonathan Yaniv, applied to participate in 2019. Jessica Simpson refused to confirm the status, but at that time, Jessica Simpson had male genitalia and was denied entry and filed a human rights complaint. Now, it was dismissed recently, just in July of 2025, largely on procedural grounds because Jessica Simpson had not met deadlines and completed filing requirements, etc. So we're happy with the outcome, but you know, this is far from over in terms of this transgender ideology being a powerful political force in Canada.
So in other words, the pageant won sort of on a technicality because Simpson's lawyers or his team, didn't have their blank together. In other words, they missed filings and so forth. Otherwise, do you think you would have won that case?
Well, the ideology is strongly entrenched. You see in federal prisons, for example, since 2017, when gender expression and gender identity were added to the Canadian Human Rights Act and they were added to the criminal code, and since 2017, trans-identifying males are allowed to transfer into women's prisons. And some of these people are convicted rapists. Many, almost all of them, 90% are convicted of a violent crime or a sexual crime or both. And just by saying that they identify as a woman, they can get a transfer into women's prisons. And so we've had situations of privacy violations, these men staring at women in the bathroom change room situations. So the Justice Center is providing lawyers to sue the federal government to get rid of this policy that's been in place now for about 8 years.
I know that's a case you're working on right now with the Canadian Women's Sex-Based Rights Organization, COSBAR. But getting back to the Simpson case and the Galaxy pageant, why did this take 5 years?
You know, the process is the punishment. I mean, sadly, our courts in Canada always take, instead of taking weeks or months for a criminal matter, family law matter, civil dispute, breach of contract, constitutional case, instead of taking weeks or months, it always takes years. And there are too few judges. I don't believe the judges are lazy. It might be one or two lazy judges, but on the whole, they're very hardworking people trying to get through as many cases as possible. But we have too few judges. So the federal and provincial governments need to appoint a lot more judges so that we can get through, so that Canadians can get quicker access to justice.
What sort of reforms need to be put in place so that we can't have these frivolous cases, dragging on forever and ever?
It's not hard for the Ford government or for any other province to amend the human rights legislation and to put to add a clause that says, for greater certainty, human beings with male genitalia are not allowed to go into women's change rooms, women's bathrooms, female sporting competitions. They're not allowed to be volunteers at rape crisis counseling centers. And you put that in there, problem solved. I don't know. Does Doug Ford understand that his government could amend the legislation to put an end to this? I don't know if he does or not. I don't know if this is, and I'm not picking on him. It's every premier in the country can change the legislation to get rid of, obviously stupid and ridiculous claims that should never see the light of day.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frischenetz-Sekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe. Dein Markt.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 Euro pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
I want to move on to, this is a case I'm guessing many Canadians are not aware of, and it is talk about government overreach, this time on a First Nations reserve. Terry Wayne Francois, he has been banished by the Cree Nation, exiled essentially from his home and his family without, it would appear, any due process after what sounds like a minor incident at a community check stop back in December of 2024. What happened?
So this was in Manitoba, and Terry had crossed over this checkpoint many, many, many times, going on reserve, off reserve for groceries, work, whatever. Single dad, raising five daughters. And in December 2024, the people at the checkpoint they had a dog there, which they had not had previously, and wanted the dog to go into the car. And Terry objected and said, I don't want the dog in my car, and drove off. And then for this, he was banished from living on the reserve. And so our lawyers have filed an action in federal court to challenge that banishment, which is a pretty severe penalty that was imposed, by the way, without any due process. There was not a hearing or an opportunity for him to defend himself, et cetera, et cetera. It was an edict that was issued by the bank council just like that.
May sound like a pretty naive question, but does the charter apply to First Nation reserves?
Absolutely, it does. We had another case a number of years ago where a band council tried to prevent Virginia Little Wolf from running for band council on the specious grounds that she was in a common law relationship. This was a rule that other people were not following. It was not being enforced, and the rule itself was not valid. And so we won on the basis of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We won the case against the band, and she was allowed to run for band council. So yeah, the charter applies for sure to every inch of Canadian soil, whether it's reserve or not.
All right, that takes us to Evan Blackman's bank account freeze. And again, the JCCF to the rescue here, securing a court order compelling the RCMP and the TD Bank to release records about the freezing of his bank accounts. This was during the 2022 Freedom Convoy protests. He was acquitted of mischief charges in 2023. I believe there's a retrial happening in August this year. And again, the bank account freeze was enabled by the Emergency Act, which a federal court has ruled unconstitutional, illegal. Tell me more about this case. I mean, I would imagine this could set a precedent for accountability against authoritarian financial crackdowns.
Well, we certainly hope so, because what the government did in February of 2022 was just horrific. There was no due process. It was instantly treating Canadians donating to an entirely peaceful protest suddenly had their bank accounts frozen, and the banks were all too compliant. They could have pushed back against these federal edicts and said, well, wait a minute. So we do have a court ruling, which the Justice Center was involved in that case, where the court ruled in January 2024, Justice Mosley of the federal court ruled that the federal government's use of the Emergencies Act was illegal. The freezing of bank accounts was an unjustified violation of the charter right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. The measures cracking down on the protests were unreasonable, unjustified violations of the freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly. So we have a powerful court ruling that the federal government's conduct was illegal. Now, how that applies to the Evan Blackman case is that he was already acquitted. Unfortunately, the Crown appealed, so there's a retrial. If he is acquitted again, our lawyers are going to argue that because of the government's egregious conduct in freezing his bank account, the charges should be stayed. So even if there's a conviction, there should not be a criminal record. And so in that context, the judge has ordered the RCMP and the TD Bank to turn over documents to the court for the judge to review, to look at the freezing of Evan Blackman's bank account. So that's a wonderful step forward towards accountability.
What implications might there be for future government use of emergency powers with this case?
You know, a lot of people complain, and I think with good reason, about how we don't have enough accountability in the Prime Minister illegal and cabinet illegally used the Emergencies Act when there was not a true national emergency as required by the legislation. They didn't comply with the legislation, and there's no accountability there. Meanwhile, you've got people like Tamara Leach and Chris Barber and so many others that are facing criminal charges and in some cases getting criminal convictions over participating in a peaceful protest, which is very worrisome. And perhaps we need the Emergencies Act to have some teeth in it for greater accountability for federal officials.
That brings us to another debanking. There was the bank freezing, and now we have a debanking situation. Eva Chipiuk by the Royal Bank of Canada, a Freedom Convoy lawyer, abruptly debanked by RBC after minor cryptocurrency transactions. Again, you're spotlighting this issue. I mean, this echoes the freezing of something like 200 accounts during the 2022 protests under the Emergency Act. The RBC is claiming this is not political. It has something to do with unusual banking activity. What do you make of this?
Well, I'd like to hear of a lawyer that was not involved in Freedom Convoy that's having their bank account frozen. I don't think it's happening. The banks are supposedly they're private actors, and the charter does not apply to them. However, they are subject to federal regulations, and I think it's important for the federal government to amend the banking legislation or the regulations, either or both, to simply state that the banks cannot discriminate on the basis of political opinion or peaceful political activity. Because this is not the first time I've heard of this. I mean, I've heard it firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand. There are people who are not aligned with the woke politics, equity, diversity, inclusion. They're not, you know, progressive, and they face these debanking situations, which appear to be politically motivated. And obviously purchasing cryptocurrency, I don't know how many people are doing that. I suspect it's a huge number. Why that should be anybody's business or the concern of a bank is just ridiculous. So I think the federal government needs to change those regulations and tell the banks you cannot discriminate based on political opinion.
Not a lot of transparency in RBC's decision to terminate Eva's accounts. Are there legal mechanisms you can pursue to compel banks to provide clear justification for debanking that would balance privacy with accountability?
It would be possible for this lawyer to sue the Royal Bank, it might be an uphill fight. The banks tend to have, they have a lot of money, obviously, and they've got a big legal department. They would probably fight it tooth and nail. The court action would be very expensive. But conceivably, if the resources were there, she could sue them. And then in the context of the lawsuit, she could probably find more information because sometimes a lawsuit can kind of smoke out what somebody's real reasons are. You can't keep on hiding behind the pretext that was provided initially.
I was telling listeners we may have some breaking news regarding Sean Foyt. This is the American pastor, musician, pro-MAGA individual who was touring Canada, only to find that some of his venues and tours were being, or concerts were being canceled by municipalities. Of course, he was in Montreal. Police entered the church. The church was fined because he was, I don't know, worshiping without a permit. The police stood by as protesters launched a smoke bomb into the church. Just even the CBC now sort of backing off a little bit and saying, well, maybe there was a little bit of censorship going on here. The breaking news is what?
He has so far, to the best of my knowledge, he's gotten large crowd, thanks to the CBC smear job, you know, calling him a MAGA musician, when in fact he is a Christian musician who happens to be a Republican supporter. I'm sure if he was a Christian musician who supported the Democrats, the CBC wouldn't call him a Democrat musician. They would just leave it alone. But, you know, they can't stand the fact that there's people in this world who, you know, don't share the CBC's opinions about Donald Trump or abortion or you know, homosexuality or transgender issues or whatever else. So his concerts are in all the places where he's been canceled. And it's totally wrong, by the way. It's illegal for governments to discriminate against somebody because of their religious or political beliefs. There has to be state neutrality. But in all the places where the government-owned or government-run venue canceled, he still managed to have a concert somewhere else. So lawyers are in place to defend the church in Montreal, which hosted the worship service. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see where that goes. He's being accused. The church is being accused of holding a concert without a permit. But, you know, the issue at trial is going to be, well, is this really a concert when you've got a guy with a few other people going up to the front and playing their guitars and playing the drums and they're doing a worship service? The city might have a hard time trying to prove that that's a concert.
Parks Canada, the city of Moncton, Montreal, and Charlottetown now perhaps facing legal action?
That's going to be up to the organization. I think it's called Burn 24/7. The organization that is managing the tour could, in theory, could sue the city of Charlottetown and city of Moncton and so on and so forth. I can't predict what their instructions will be, but I would not be surprised if they said, you know, look, we don't want to start a whole bunch of court actions. You also run the risk of having the court say, well, it's moot, it's over and done with, it's no longer relevant, which would be a bad decision because I think we do need clarity, but you're likely to, or there's a good chance that these venues are going to succeed in arguing before the court that it's moot. And so then, yeah, turns out to be a bit of waste of time, effort, and energy to pursue them legally.
And will JCCF be involved in these cases?
Our lawyers are in discussion with Sean Foyt's, with the organization that's managing the tour. So, you know, and there's more to come because there are concerts scheduled for Western Canada. So we're in discussions with them to provide support for freedom of expression.
Well, the JCCF has never been needed more than it is right now. Well, in fact, over the last 4 or 5 years. How can we find out more about the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, get involved, and support you?
So our website is www.jccf.ca. So JCCF is Justice Center Constitutional Freedoms, jccf.ca. And if you're interested in you can sign up for a free newsletter. If you want to donate, we do not ask for or receive any government funding. So people are welcome to donate online and we'll get an official tax receipt in February for your donation. And we're going to keep on fighting hard in court cases all across Canada.
John, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for yours. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks for listening to The Richard Serrett Show. I'll speak with you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.